The Veterans Report is sponsored by James Cannon.
Welcome to the Veterans Report, the region's only show dedicated to those who have served our country. We have the latest news and information on resources available to veterans, including health care, education, employment tips, local volunteer organizations, and more. To those who have served, those who are serving, and to those who will, we salute you. And now, the host of the Veterans Report, Jim Cannon.
And welcome back to the Veterans Report. Thanks for joining us today. We have a pretty good show lined up. We have some news. We have some information. We have a new weekly poll question. And our guest at the halfway mark is a current Washington County, Pennsylvania commissioner, now running for lieutenant governor, Diana Irie Vaughn. So stay tuned for that. That'll be an interesting interview. She's a smart cookie. She has a lot of good stuff to say. And she's also going to be discussing her running mate, Paul Mango, who is a former West Pointer. Well, I guess you're never a former West Pointer. A West Pointer, former 82nd Airborne, and he is running for governor. So Mr. Mango and Diana are teaming up to take on the powers that be here in the great state of Pennsylvania, the Commonwealth. So stick around for that. Again, that's at the halfway point in the show. If you're listening, you can use the TuneIn app. Go to KHB Radio, 620 AM, and tune in that way. Or you can go to khbradio.com and listen live. All the news and information you hear on the show is on our website, theveteransreport.com. That's all one word, theveteransreport.com. Check it out. It's a pretty cool looking site. And my buddy David there with, is it Web? My buddy David put it together. So check it out. And if you're looking for a new website, his information is at the bottom of the page. So that's enough of that stuff. So last week, well, maybe it was the week. Yeah, last week. There was the shooting in the California veterans' home, Yountville, California, and I failed to cover it. I failed miserably. You know, sometimes putting stories together, we get a little behind the eight ball in terms of posting stuff on social media and promotions and pulling news and living everyday life and still, you know, picking up dry cleaning and going grocery shopping. So I failed, but interestingly enough, there have been follow-up stories since then. So I could have played this off as if I'd planned it this way, but I certainly did not. As you might recall, a veteran who had been part of the Yountville Veterans Home out there, he was in one of the programs, the guy had been, what was his name? Wong, Mr. Wong, Albert Wong, 36 years old, shot three workers in the head with a rifle at the California Veterans Home in Yountville. The sheriff did not release the type of rifle used. And he said that he then used a shotgun to shoot himself at the Pathway Home building. Pathway Home was a nonprofit organization that treated combat veterans for post-traumatic stress syndrome and other mental health disorders. So Wong had served in Afghanistan from April 2011 to March 2012, came home, got enrolled, and they got expelled. They threw him out of the program. And then he came back later, basically walked in, and ended up taking a bunch of people prisoner, shot three of them, killed himself. And the police didn't know that for up to 8 hours. They waited outside, and then they finally sent a robot in and saw everybody. And but anyway, the follow-up was all of this. They didn't... The original stories, when this all came out, they weren't quite sure how the situation unfolded. Now they have sort of a timeline in describing how this went down. What an awful, senseless, pointless tragedy that is. Just apparently the workers were having I think it was a going away party for one of their coworkers when this guy walked in. So I mean they had no chance at all. And I guess the this California, this is a pretty big, I think this was the biggest one in California, this veterans home. And it's going to be closed indefinitely, or at least the pathway home. They're suspending the program indefinitely. What a shame. So we've covered a lot of stories here on stolen valor and fraud, people defrauding the public using veterans' names or veterans' charities as sort of the vehicle by which to do that, setting up fake charities, taking money. So four people were charged with using Wounded Warrior name, the Wounded Warrior name, oh wait, Wounded Warrior Fund to raise over $150,000 for personal profit. This came off CNN. So apparently these folks, they were using Wounded Warrior and they tacked, instead of Wounded Warrior Project, which is the official nonprofit, they cut that word out and they used fund instead of project and were using that to solicit money. The Wounded Warrior Project is a legitimate multi-million dollar nonprofit organization with nationwide recognition. The Wounded Warrior Fund, on the other hand, was a complete scam, federal prosecutors say. After a three-year investigation by the Secret Service and Clark County Sheriff's Office, four people were indicted February 28th by a federal grand jury. The case was unsealed last Friday. 150, man. So they worked with the man picking up. So this went on for three and a half years, where these folks presented themselves falsely as a nonprofit organization serving veterans in Kentucky, Indiana, and Ohio. These four people worked together to defraud more than 1,000 victims, collect more than $150,000 in traceable donations. Oh, over 6 years. 6 years. The indictment alleges they told donors 100% of their contributions would go to veterans and their families. Investigators say no money went toward veterans. Okay, so that was a red flag right there. You're going to tell people 100%? Wrong. That is incredible. The four, here's a quote. The four are suspected of using aliases to make cold calls and flyers and to seek business donations to help veterans and active duty service members and their families in need, payable in cash, checks, gift cards, or in-kind donations, according to law enforcement. Three pleaded not guilty in court, and the fourth is set to appear in court, was set to appear in court later in the week. One of them made calls pretending to be Sergeant Bob Davis, while his associate, Tom Johnson, used the alias Paul Bradley. So they're being charged with all kinds of stuff, right? The four are being charged with 227 counts of wire fraud, mail fraud, conspiracy to commit wire fraud, and conspiracy to commit mail fraud. They each could face 20 years in prison. The group's flyers for a, quote, veteran family assistance program and Hoosier Overseas calling card program. And it just goes on to tell you that it was, they were just stating what the funds were going to be used for. So the point of this whole thing, right, the reason I'm teeing this up is, well, a couple of points. One, if you're out there, I mean, some of you are involved with nonprofits, and that's fantastic. Those of you who are not, and a lot of people like to go out and sort of find, if you're going to divert your money, you want to find something that's sort of up your alley, right, sort of interest. And a lot of people look towards veterans charities. And then it's you can really get buried in the number, just the sheer number of charities that are out there in the world. And a lot of them are devoted toward veteran causes. The problem is you have to dig. You have to figure out which ones are legitimate and which ones are not. Now, we've had a lot on this show, and we're going to continue to have more. But again, it takes research. You have to dig into this. And there are a bunch of sites out there. We're going to try to get somebody, I said this before, we're going to try to get somebody from one of the groups that evaluates nonprofits and charities. Sort of an unbiased, nonpartisan group that just rates them. It looks at their financials. It looks at the way they run their organization. the way they raise funds, where it goes, and rates them accordingly. So people can go online, they can type in the charity name, and instantly get a feedback, get some kind of review on whether or not that charity's really sort of worth their time and their money. But the point is, you have to do your research. It's too easy. And you know what? And at first glance, if I had seen, well, I take that back. If I had seen Wounded Warrior Fund, I probably would have looked twice. Just because Wounded Warrior was such a unique name, the Wounded Warrior Project, for somebody to bite 2/3 of that title and then slip something else in there was kind of weak. But if it had been something crazy like, I don't know, Pennsylvania Special Operations Family Assistance Group or something like that, right? Just at first blush, you wouldn't know that it was legitimate or not legitimate. So buyer beware, do your research. But the other part of this is there are people out there who have zero moral compass, and they are willing to defraud people using something like military service as sort of the wedge to get their foot in the door. And look, I'm not naive. I realize that people have always behaved poorly, but something like this is this is beyond the pale. And then the third problem, because of that, you know, you have sort of that ripple effect. You have secondary and tertiary effects. In this case, so somebody gets burned on this, right? Let's say they gave money once, twice, three times. Say it's somebody who just, you know, not a huge amount. Maybe they gave $500 over 3 or 4 years, right? 20 here, 50 there. Well, obviously, they find out this is a scam. It was all nonsense. They're going to be reluctant to ever give money again to any charity of any type. And so these four criminals, these crooks, have now sort of screwed it up for a lot of other groups out there who do mean well and are legitimate. So you have that unintended consequence of sort of spoiling the whole barrel, which is not cool. So there was a piece on one of these, it was military.com, and I just thought it was kind of humorous. We'll have this up on the site. Six dumb things veterans lie about on the internet. I'll just go through. I'm not going to read all of them, but one, their occupational specialty. Two, what they did in country. Let me read what they did in country. No matter when or where troops are deployed, there are tons of pogues out there who never see direct combat. For whatever reason, these veterans will lie to make their deployment sound like a Call of Duty mission. Maybe they feel ashamed, or maybe they want to seem cool because they have that Afghanistan campaign medal on their chest, but not a combat action ribbon. Who knows? Three, how tough they are at shooting and fighting. Four, that time they were with special forces. Five is accomplishments. And six is how they handled their peanut butter shot, which I still don't know what that is. Somebody told me it was a vaccine. I don't think I ever got that one. Or if I did, I don't remember calling it the peanut butter shot. I don't even know what that is. Anyway, that'll be up. It's kind of sort of tongue-in-cheek, kind of snarky. But true, right? To a point. Oh, so the VA, right? So we had Secretary Shulkin on here not long ago. Talking about, he was just bringing us up to date on some stuff that was going on with the VA. So fast forward, that was before this whole thing with the, you know, the controversy over the Wimbledon tickets and some of the other heat he's been catching recently. So, you know, it's the mob mentality in DC, right? So the media starts a rumor and it starts going downhill. Well, you know, Trump is going to get rid of Shulkin. That started, what, 3 weeks ago? And now it's gaining steam and momentum. So there were a number of stories out, one of which, I don't know what the root of the story was, but they'd mentioned Rick Perry being considered, and then some. I think this whole thing is a creation of the media. But anyway, that's my conspiracy theory, my Alex Jones conspiracy theory hat that I'm wearing. Anyway, so they start this rumor that Rick Perry was in line to take over the VA, and he immediately said, "I have no interest in that." Rick Perry, right now the Secretary of Energy and also an Air Force vet. So then another story popped up that said Pete Hegseth, and some of you might know him if you watch Fox News. Pete Hegseth is sort of a younger looking guy, kind of tall, dark hair, a rather handsome fellow, but he's on Fox. I think he does a lot of Fox and Friends Weekend. Here it is. I know he was on in the morning. But anyway, Hegseth served in Iraq. I think he was an infantry officer. He had been involved in some stuff when he got out of the service. He'd been involved in Vets for Freedom and Concerned Veterans for America. And then he ended up... Concerned Veterans for America is one of the... It's a group founded and funded by the Koch brothers, Charles and David Koch. It's a conservative group that, I mean, as the name implies, they track veterans issues and they sort of stay on top of that. But they have a conservative bent, whereas, you know, you get, what was the group? VoteVets.org. They're a hard left-leaning group, right? Concerned Veterans are sort of a hard right-leaning group. Just a counterbalance. Anyway, so Pete Hegseth was with them for a while. He was the executive director and then ended up getting that contract with Fox. But there was a really lengthy story. And again, I'll put this... Oh, that's in the Washington Post. This will be up on the site as well. About Hegseth being considered to take over the VA. I like Pete Hegseth. I get him. His personality is... It can be a little biting at times, but I think for the most part, he gets it. I mean, he definitely wants people to do right. And he's been very critical of the VA probably over the last year and a half, 2 years. And he has not split hairs about this, along with the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee chairman, who is a Republican. So, hardcore conservative or not, he, when it comes to veterans issues, he's had no problem sort of plucking off the party labels from people before really laying into them. Now, that in itself, I don't think qualifies Mr. Hegseth to lead the VA. I mean, that's a heck of a big... I think that's the second biggest federal agency, if I have that correct. That's a lot. That's a lot to take on for a guy who's 37 years old and, I mean, limited outside work experience other than hosting a TV show and being involved in a couple of groups for a brief period. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. But again, you know, I'll put on the conspiracy hat. I think that things like, I mean, and we're seeing more and more and more of this, right? Where some rumor comes out of left field and then the media chases it like a pack of dogs because they think it's going to be, you know, interesting and juicy media play. And then they sort of fill in the blanks only to find out that the whole thing was nonsense to begin with. But we'll see. I know Shulkin's been under fire just for random stuff in the last month and a half here, which I don't think is entirely fair because that's it's a big group to lead, but it is his group. So if you're going to steer the ship, you got to be responsible when you run aground. So interesting story and a bit narrow in scope, but Winchester and Clark County, I think this is in Kentucky. Yes, Winchester and Clark County, Kentucky, have joined forces to honor Korean War veterans with signs marking where the 38th parallel runs through Clark County. Now, why is that relevant, you ask? Well, the 38th parallel is the dividing line between North and South Korea, as established by a ceasefire in 1953. Winchester Mayor Ed Bertner said there's a state program to place signs honoring veterans at places where the parallel crosses public roads. He said Clark County GIS identified three locations in the city, and they named them, and there may be more locations in the county which could be added later. Wednesday, Bertner approached the Clark County Fiscal Court about splitting the costs of the sign with the city. Bertner said the cost would be $1,000 per location rather than the $2,000 he quoted during the Board of Commissioners meeting last week. So I got to tell you, that's that's kind of a cool thing. That's a unique way to recognize an often forgotten conflict. I'd say for $1,000 per location, that's kind of on the low end, right? I like it. Now, obviously, the 38th parallel runs through more places than Kentucky, so that'd be kind of neat to have sort of a national chain of memorial markers, wouldn't it? All the way across the U.S.? I don't know, just a thought. I mean, if they can do it for $1,000 per marker in Kentucky, right, it's going to be a little bit higher in some other areas. But overall, that's not a bad cost. Maybe instead of doing a national military parade, just throwing this out there, maybe we devote some federal funds to a national Korean War memorial, right, that stretches across the 38th parallel across the entire country. How's that for a thought? I think that's pretty creative. Huh. Yeah, next time I get the president on the phone, I'll throw that out to him. Speaking of the parade, it's still in the news. Where is the... So, some of you know, Donald Trump had proposed a veterans parade. It's gaining steam, and they even have a date lined up now that I did not write down. I think it's Veterans Day this year or next year. I don't remember. they did say one of the things that all the stories specified was that there would be no tanks. That was one of the more intelligent decisions in this whole mess, was not running tanks through downtown D.C. I mean, the roads there are awful enough. They don't need to tear them up anymore. But there was a follow-up to this, if I could find it here, that... So they were going to do a military parade. They're going to have active military as part of this. But veterans groups apparently were not factored into this. So it was it was all just for the military, which, okay, I mean, it's a little weird. Veterans' role in Trump's military parade remains unclear. Oh, it's going to happen this fall. Yeah, this fall's National Military Parade. So the planners have promised to make former service members a key focus of the event, to include heavy involvement from veterans groups and integration with the annual Washington, D.C. Veterans Day Parade. But top Veterans Affairs officials said this week they've had no involvement in the planning. Of course, right? Right hand, left hand. Oh, you got the story up? Oh, that's amazing. Oh, that's military. Yeah, that's where I got it. Military Times. Here's the best line. Also, there's no such thing as the annual Washington, D.C. Veterans Day Parade. Ta-da! This is one where I think everybody just sort of shakes their head. Yeah. Last week, defense officials released a planning memo for the event that doesn't exist, that promised a national celebration highlighting the contributions of our veterans throughout the history of the U.S. military, with an emphasis on the price of freedom. Apparently, the price of freedom is $30 million, because that's how much it's going to cost for this dumb parade. That's going to coincide with an event that doesn't exist. I'm having fun with this. I don't know. I just, yeah. There's a lot of other very serious matters going on in the world. So the fact that we can take something like this and sort of have a good time with it and mock it, I'm grateful. I'm grateful to live in this country so we can do things like that. Oh, man. I'm scanning the rest of this because it's... We have not hosted a Veterans Day parade, said Latoya Foster, press secretary for Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser. Generally, there are a number of small events taking place in town. Those include a series of community service projects with local volunteers, volunteers, When asked about the absence of a local parade, defense officials in a statement said, "We are in the planning phase, and as we go along, we'll get more clarity." Just throwing it out there, you might want to get some clarity before you announce this stuff and get everybody rolling on it. Oh, amazing. Amazing. I can't even pin this one on the Pentagon. This one sits squarely in the White House. Oh, takes your breath away. So, on that note, so last week's poll question had to do with Afghanistan. It was very simple. And it was, it's been 17 years since U.S. troops set foot in Afghanistan. Is it time for the U.S. to devise a conclusion and leave the country? In other words, is it time to go? 73% of you said yes, absolutely. 27% said nope, we still have a shot. And I think that probably reflects general sentiment across the country. This week's poll question, which will be up on Facebook as soon as I can undo the gremlins that are currently invading. Yeah, I've got another week of electronic gremlins. Former SEAL Rob O'Neill, the guy that's been running around claiming to have been the guy who actually shot Osama bin Laden, claiming, of course, in a recent Newsweek article said that the photos released by the U.S. government of Osama bin Laden, of his corpse, were fake. And he knows because he was there. And he went into graphic detail on how he knows they are fake. So the question this week is, and he wants the government, Rob O'Neill is saying the government needs to release them. So the question this week is, should the U.S. government release the actual photos of bin Laden's corpse? Yes or no? So jump on our Facebook page, take the poll, let us know what you think. We're going to jump to a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have our guest, Diana Irie Vaughn. If you want to keep up with the latest in veteran news away from the radio, stop by our website at www.theveteransreport.com. There you'll find news headlines, along with links to media outlets around the world. You can also find links to every state's veteran services office. And for you film buffs, there's even a link to a war movie database. We appreciate you stopping by the Facebook page at facebook.com/theveteransreport. There, like the website, you'll find the latest news and information related to veterans. For you high-speed individuals who want to limit yourself to 140 characters, stop by our Twitter account. It's a great way to find information on veteran organizations throughout the country and what they're up to. You can tweet us by using @TheVetsReport. If you'd like to email the show directly, please send us your input, comments, or suggestions to editor@TheVeteransReport.com. Thanks again for checking out our pages. Thanks for listening, and thank you for supporting our veterans community. And we're back on the Veterans Report. We appreciate you sticking in there with us. We have with us our guest and candidate for Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor, Diana Irie Vaughn. Diana, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for asking me to be on the show.
Oh, no, my pleasure. Thank you for taking the time to do this. So you're running for lieutenant governor, which to me I think would be insane. But I've known you for a couple of years, and I know that you have the will and the resolve to see this thing through. So just for our listeners' background, if you could. Give me a little bit about your history in terms of, you know, where are you from? How did you get into politics? And right now you're serving as a Washington County Commissioner, and you've been there a while, too.
Yes, I've been serving as Washington County Commissioner for 22 years. This is my sixth term in office. I was recruited to run for commissioner back in 1995. I had been active in the community, and the Republican Party approached me and asked me if I would consider running. And I said, well, what's a commissioner do? And they told me that it was a part-time job, and it was just more community service. And since I was already very invested in the community, I decided to enter the race. About 70 hours a week later on the job, I can tell you it's a complete full-time job. It is still community service, but so much more.
That's, yeah. They weren't very upfront with that, huh?
I don't think they understood what a commissioner really did. And I will tell you that the job has grown more and more demanding over the years. And the constituent service and just the requirements that the public has in the delivery of services.
Well, and to be fair, Washington County itself has gone through sort of a boom as well in terms of population and economic growth, too.
Washington County is one of only two counties in southwestern Pennsylvania that has grown in population in the last 10 years. We were number three in job growth at one point in the last several years. And, you know, we really have had a tremendous opportunity. We positioned Washington County well, keeping taxes very low. We have one of the lowest county tax rates in all of Pennsylvania. We had ready available sites for businesses to come and locate. So we've taken advantage of an opportunity with the Marcellus Shale to come into Washington County, and we've done very well.
Well, and again, you've been at the forefront of that, and some other seats during your tenure have changed, and there have been some faces that have come and gone, but you've been the one constant for two decades there.
I have been. I'm very fortunate. I've worked with five different commissioners over my time, and now I have two that we have a tremendous working relationship. And in my 22 years, we've accomplished a lot. I think that the working relationship you see on the Board of Commissioners right now allows us to accomplish a great deal. It's very different than what you see in Harrisburg or in Washington, D.C. There's no partisan politics. We keep politics out of everything we do, and we accomplish a great deal of working together.
Well, and I'm really glad you brought that up, because I was going to, and you stole my thunder. The way Washington County operates, it is unique in that the party label really only applies during election time, and even then it's a little bit murky. You all tend to get along, and you do put the partisan stuff aside because it's community-oriented.
It's all about the people that we serve. And if you elect individuals that have a heart for service, and that's what they're there for, this is what you're going to get. And both Larry Maggi, Harlan Schober, myself, you know, we do have disagreements at times behind closed doors, but we disagree without being disagreeable. And we respect one another, we respect each other's opinions, and we put the people first.
That's crazy. It'll never work. It'll never work. So I want to touch on some other stuff before we get into sort of veteran specific issues here.
Okay.
Pennsylvania, and I don't like. Well, I'll get into this. Pennsylvania lags behind other states in terms of the numbers of women in elective office. And as of November of 2017, I pulled the numbers on this. There were 1,843 women across 50 state legislatures. Serving in the state legislatures. In Pennsylvania, we have 40 in the House and 7 in the Senate, which comprises 18.6% of the Pennsylvania state legislature. That's on the low end when you compare it to other states. And I think it's important to bring that up. Now, have you, and again, I hate to bring up gender because I think either you're qualified to do the job or you're not, but I think in your case, it's important to highlight this. Have you encountered any resistance or pushback or I hate to use the word chauvinism, from sort of the political old boys club in Pennsylvania?
Yes, you're always going to have some of that. And I had it much worse when I first was elected. I'm the first female commissioner Washington County's had, and there hadn't been a lot of female commissioners across the Commonwealth when I took office. And I was the third in our region to take office. But, you know, you're always going to have biases, whether they're gender-based or based on some other reason. And as a woman, I just have learned how to work through that, not to be overly offended by that, and to just find common ground to get beyond that when gender is the issue.
I don't know how you do it. I mean, you're obviously more patient than most of us, because I think some of us would would give it right back, you know?
Well, can I tell you that I think patience comes with raising three children?
There's that, yes. And great kids they turned out to be, so they have a great role model. Now, what was your, what was sort of the spark or the impetus for you to get into this, to run for lieutenant governor? Did somebody lie to you again and tell you it was just going to be like a part-time position?
Well, I'll tell you, I met Paul Mango, who's a gubernatorial candidate, last spring. And I got to know him. I ended up endorsing him, myself and three other commissioners across the Commonwealth. We did a video endorsing this man that we believe has tremendous leadership skills and can offer a lot to the Commonwealth. I got to know him much better through this past year, and he came to me and said, you know, I'm looking for a strong lieutenant governor running mate, and I'd like you to consider being my running mate. And as I did that, and I dove more deeply into his positions, and this man actually has a plan for Pennsylvania. If you go on his website, mangoforpa.com, you can read all about his positions and his plan. It's called Restore the Dream. I got really excited about the opportunity to have a greater impact for Pennsylvania. You know, Washington County's had tremendous success, and I would like to replicate the successes we've had in Washington County and bring that to all of Pennsylvania.
Well, let's now you mentioned Paul Mango. Let's veer off course for like a minute or two. Give me some of his background. Tell us what we need to know about Paul Mango.
Paul Mango comes from humble beginnings, and he's lived the American dream. He is a West Point graduate. That is where he met his wife. They're both West Point grads. He has raised five daughters in the southwestern Pennsylvania area. One has followed in his in their mother and father's footsteps as a West Point grad, just came back from serving in South Korea. Paul Mango went on to Harvard for business, and he helped to build a very successful global consulting company. Now, he was in the 82nd Division. He was a paratrooper. So this man has tremendous leadership skills, and he put together a plan for how he wants to see Pennsylvania transformed into a place where our children want to stay, where we're thriving in jobs, and where we're serving our veterans. Being a veteran himself, serving our veterans is very important to him, just as it is to me, being the wife of a man who's been mobilized seven times in 14 years.
Well, and I've told so many people offline, Diana, about your husband, and we don't have to mention what his job was or is, but I will say I have told multiple people, including some in that part of the military, that this guy he's like the dream. I mean, he is.
He really is, and I appreciate you saying that. But I'll tell you, he's in year 41 of military service. He joined the Marines when he was 17, he served as a Marine for 12 years, and then he went Army Reserves. He's also a retired state trooper, 25 years he served in the state police.
That is amazing. Well, again, and thank him for all of that, and that's coming from me. So
thank you.
No, that's awesome. And I also think that's not just to put him on a pedestal. That indicates, and that sort of underscores, I should say, you know the world of veterans. You know what they expect and what they need. And so that there's always going to be that voice in the background saying, hey, are you hooking us up? Are you doing right by us? So there, you have an obligation. You have a personal obligation as well as sort of a political one. And we'll get to the veteran specific stuff in just a minute here. What do you think, a big picture, maybe I should have saved this for the last portion here, but big picture, what qualifies you to be the lieutenant governor?
The position of a lieutenant governor is that in an administrative position, which is what I do for Washington County as commissioner. Many programs are mandated by the state, and they come to the county to be administered. So I have a boots-on-the-ground public service experience with how legislation and mandates affect the people directly. So I have that experience. Have been very successful at balancing budgets, delivering every budget on time in Washington County, managing the unions, managing employees, and this is something important you're going to love, managing a successful pension fund for our employees. We are 90% funded. We have the lowest assumed rate of return in all of Pennsylvania counties at 6.75. We started an OPEB trust account, which is an other post-employment benefit trust account. We made changes that we were allowed to make. We stopped providing health care in 2003. It was a guaranteed health care for every employee who'd worked 20 years till the day that they passed. So these lifetime benefits, I'm used to taking a look at that. What can we do? I'm used to making the right decisions in making sure that we're financially responsible. Washington County has a AA bond rating. So I've done a lot of things for the county that I see the state lacking in. And I'll tell you, Washington County, we 5 months running, we have secured more benefits for our veterans.
Oh, that's good news.
Yes. So we're doing a good job in most areas in Washington County. You know, there's always areas for improvement, but the area that we really need to improve is where everyone needs to improve, and that's in addressing the opioid crisis.
I was going to ask about that. If you you and or your running mate have any ideas or approaches or you know, ways to combat this thing, because it seems to me like nobody can get their arms around this.
This problem is so massive that it's going to take a number of years before we know exactly what the right procedures are, the right steps are, to really have an impact. But I will tell you that around half of individuals who have a substance use disorder, and that's the clinical term for it, also have behavioral health issues. And a lot of times they're not being addressed. And if we don't start addressing the behavioral health issues in conjunction with treatment for substance use disorder, we're not going to succeed. We have to try new initiatives in prevention, because what we've done for so long, just say no to drugs, that hasn't worked at all. We've just seen the problem escalate. I think we have to be tougher on those who are selling. We have to use mandatory sentences. And I think that we have to start catching individuals who are arrested at an earlier time and get them into treatment. We've started new initiatives. A lot of counties have. We have behavioral health court. We have drug court. We have a veterans court. But we need to, when we can first capture individuals before this is a 10-year history with them, we have to start more treatments. We have a pilot program in the Washington County Correctional Facility right now, which is one of my responsibilities as commissioner. And we've started this new drug called Vivitrol. These injections are once-a-month injections prior to release. It's one tool in the toolbox, but this new drug that's been out for several years has had tremendous success if individuals adhere to this program for at least 6 months. We need to do more in reentry for individuals who are incarcerated with substance use disorder because, no pun intended, but we have a captive audience. You know, and when they're clean, because, you know, they've had to be clean in the correctional facility, we have a better chance at getting them to change their way of thinking because their mind is clear for the first time in many, many years for a lot of them. We have to look at start doing benchmarking for programs that we're using to determine what's effective. If we don't have substantiated outcomes, we don't know what's working, what's not, and we haven't done a good job tracking that.
Oh no, I agree with that, and I think that's the large part of the issue is every time somebody tries a treatment, whatever it might be, there are no metrics sort of recorded on that. It's just, hey, let's try this and see if it works. And then you have those people that relapse all the time. How do you address that?
Well, I'll tell you, from what I've learned, you can't expect that someone will never relapse in their life once they have a substance use disorder. From the way it's been explained to me, there's a chemical change that happens in the brain. But what you're trying to do is get them to be in a state of recovery for longer and longer periods of time and to provide the support if they do make a mistake, that it's caught immediately so the mistake is not continuing to be repeated, so they have longer times of relapse. But this is an interesting thing that has just happened. I had reached out to our drug and alcohol director. I said, give me the best case scenario. So I want to know exactly what we need for an individual to be successful in recovery. And I get 60 pages because there are so many different aspects to it. So it's something that is not a mold that you can't point to and say, this is what's going to always work. But there are a number of components we know that you will have a higher amount of success. If an individual is going through recovery, we know that if they're not in a recovery facility for at least 6 months, their chance of success is going to be lessened. We know that if they're going to be on Vivitrol for at least 6 months, optimally it will be a year, they're going to have a much greater chance of success. We know that if we put them back into the same communities that they were in with the same relationships with others who are also suffering, their chance of recovery is going to be lessened. So we know all these different things that are going to help them to have a better chance of success. And, you know, what people don't talk about is the tremendous impact this is having on our children. I have volunteered in our correctional facility for about 5 years in a reentry program with the females that I put together. And what has become painfully clear is there's a growing population of incarcerated females, and I have not had one that did not have substance use disorder in 5 years, not one, that have this issue, and this issue is causing them to turn to crime, petty crimes, nonviolent offenders I'm talking about, and most of their children are now in the system in Children and Youth Services. They're in placement. And the latest numbers we have, that we have at least 80% of children in placement in our counties are there because one of the issues in the home is substance use disorder. It's not always the only issue, but that is a component to children at risk in our communities. And every time one child is removed from the home, we average an expenditure of $23,000. 13-month stay, that's the average for every one child removed from the home and put into placement. And then, you know, this has had an effect on grandparents. So you have so many grandparents that are now raising grandchildren. So they never intended to have this responsibility. So it's a physical responsibility. It's a financial responsibility. They're either back in the workforce or they're staying in the workforce longer, which then makes it harder for younger folks, you know, who had hoped for family-sustaining jobs, because older individuals, grandparents raising their grandchildren, have to continue working. They don't have that retirement life they were planning for. The tentacles of this are just so far-reaching. And so we have to consider all aspects when we say, how can we address this issue?
It's so devastating. And this is, you know me, I'm a rather politically minded person off the air, but as I'm sure you are. But this is one of those issues. This is one of the big ticket issues where you put the politics aside, because this affects everyone.
It does. It's hard to find somebody who doesn't at least know someone who's had a member of their family who's been impacted. And this crosses every socioeconomic barrier, every race. This is just a tremendous health crisis that we have. And what we found out also is hepatitis is on the rise because of this issue as well. So there are so many health issues involved with the opioid problem that we've got to continue to really work hard on finding the right answers to this problem, because it is changing the very fabric of our society.
Well, it's going to take a heck of an effort from everyone, local, state, and federal, sort of putting their heads together and going after this thing. But that is a good segue into our next couple of questions. I want to talk about veterans-specific issues here. So now Pennsylvania has the fourth largest veteran population in the country, and that includes, you know, Allegheny and Washington County. but that statistic is sometimes overlooked at the state level. And do you think, in your opinion, does Pennsylvania do enough, or is it doing enough, for veterans in terms of transitioning from service to civilian, job training programs, mental health services, or general support?
No, we are not. And I will tell you that veterans are twice as likely to suffer from substance use disorders. They're twice as likely to be homeless. And if we were doing our job, that would not be the case. If we were addressing behavioral health issues that they have from their service, if we were tracking our veterans, and you know, one of the things that Paul Mango has talked about creating for our veterans is an electronic marketplace that would be easy for our veterans when they're trying to transition into jobs, into civilian life, find the services that they need. You know, we are not doing enough. And we are very blessed in Washington County. We have the Washington City Mission. The Washington City Mission is a tremendous community resource that houses the homeless population. But not only do they house the homeless population, they keep them, the average length of stay is 6 months. They try to help them rebuild their life. And recently, they had a capital campaign to build a new facility called Patriot House. Patriot House is a 22-bed facility for honorably discharged veterans. And it's 22 beds because every day in America, 22 veterans take their own lives. And this new facility, they do everything from helping them to get all of their required identifications. They go through job training. There is a faith component to that. They hold them accountable. They teach them basic life skills again, because sometimes people can't transition into civilian life. And they also have a job readiness program, and they help to place people in jobs.
So,
and recently, I'm a big fan of the mission, you can tell. So recently, I decided that I needed to do more for the mission in their capital campaign. I had run my first half marathon in November of 2016, raising money for a women and children's shelter, and then found out about the need at Patriot House. So I signed up. I ran my first full marathon in May of last year, ran the Pittsburgh Marathon, and I raised around $30,000 for Patriot House. This past January, just 2 months ago, I ran a half marathon one day, the full marathon the next day, in Disney World. It was called the Goofy Challenge, raising money for Patriot House. I wore a cape, running for America's Superheroes, and on my cape I had patches of those who have served. One young man who is, you have to have him on the show, you're going to love him. He's the most inspirational young man you're ever going to want to meet. His name's Brandon Rumbaugh. He's a double amputee. He's from Uniontown, and this young man has a story that needs to be told, and he is one of the most inspiring individuals, and he is just a tremendous leader. And I had his patch in the center of my cape from when he lost his both of his legs, one at the hip and one at the knee, in Afghanistan. So I ran for our superheroes and raised over $48,000 for them in those 2 days.
That is amazing. I mean, considering that probably most of us, the older guys here, probably couldn't run a mile, and you're doing
dozens. I'm 55, and I ran 39.3 miles. And, you know, I was so inspired to do this, though, because we don't do enough for our veterans. When I see the success the places like Washington City Mission has and the heart they have to serve our veterans, we all need to step up and do our part. And it was easy to raise money for our veterans, because I do believe that the good people of this region and Pennsylvania really want to do more to serve and honor our veterans.
Well, here's, and again, thank you for doing that and the fundraising. I mean, really, that is an amazing accomplishment. But here's my issue with all this. So the Washington City Mission, great organization. They do wonderful things. They've been doing wonderful things for a long time. They're a nonprofit, right?
They're a nonprofit, and they take no government funding. Yeah. The only government funding they ever receive is if somebody should court order someone into their program, or they had applied for a local share account that they received a little bit of money towards building Patriot House. But they are not on the government dime.
But here, yeah, and exactly, though, that's my issue with this. We have an office at the state level to address Veterans Affairs.
Right.
So why aren't they doing this kind of stuff? Not to knock what the mission's doing, I think that's great, but why isn't the state doing that?
That's a very good point to make. They're not doing it, and we need to look at places like the City Mission that are having tremendous success, and we can learn a lot from them on where our government is failing.
And again, I fully support groups like that. It's just, why have the added expense and the bureaucracy in Harrisburg if they're not... You know what I mean? If they're not spending the money the same way, but
I think it, as you know, if we take a look at how we can serve our veterans, we need to do more in communities. Because I can tell you that, you know, veterans in the communities, they don't always like to have to travel to the places they have to travel, and we have to take the stigma away from, you know, they're veterans and they get this. They've earned this. And I think some veterans at times are hesitant to take what they've earned, and I think we have to show them that this is theirs, that this is not a handout, this is not something they're getting for free. They earned this.
And I appreciate you saying that. We've got about 2 minutes left. Can you think of any experience you might have had with military vets that would set you apart from other people in the race? I mean, obviously you have a personal connection.
Being the wife of a mobilized soldier, I think, gives me a little bit of insight into the needs that we have with our veterans and the struggles that they have when they do return home from combat. It's a difficult transition, and I think that if you look at the divorce rate with the military, you see that it's higher, that we are not doing a good job at serving our veterans. We have to do a better job. When you have statistics that tell you that veterans are twice as likely to be homeless, twice as likely to suffer from substance use disorder, we're missing something. And I think that the insight that I've gained from being married to a soldier and then being involved in community services that serve our veterans is going to help me to be able to craft new ways of delivering services that were actually reaching our veterans and that were meeting their needs.
Yeah, if anybody knows, you certainly do. So, I appreciate you coming on the show. I certainly hope to speak to you again before election time. So that's next up on the docket, right?
Yes, it is May 15th. Primary election day.
Outstanding. Well, if we can have you back between now and then, that'd be great.
Thank you so much.
If you have the time. But really nice talking to you and good input. We have Diana Irie Vaughn running for Lieutenant Governor of Pennsylvania. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. And that does it for this episode of the Veterans Report. Until next time, I'm your host, Jim Cannon.
You've been listening to the Veterans Report. Let others know about the show. You can find us online at theveteransreport.com. If you'd like to contact us, send an email to editor@theveteransreport.com. Join us again at the same time for up-to-date veterans news and information. The Veterans Report. Thank you for your service, and carry on.
The Veterans Report has been sponsored by James Cannon.